To item number 11, Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy. This is a briefing and a public hearing. And even though it doesn't say public input on our printed agenda, we do intend to allow public input. It's a public hearing. So we do welcome your comments and hope that you sign up. You need to sign the testimony forms if you want to testify. And presenting, Steve Thiesfeld, our Region 6 Fish Program Manager. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners,
We're here to brief you today about Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy Development. So our objectives today, we will overview the salmon resource and the fisheries in the bay, identify our key challenges from the agency and stakeholder perspectives, solicit public input later in the program, and seek your guidance on our aspirational objectives and strategies that we will use to guide development of the policy in the coming months. Our presentation outline, we'll go through the schedule of the Fish and Wildlife Committee, Fish and Wildlife Commission meetings that are upcoming, review the guidance that has been provided to the department already for salmon management, review Willapa Bay management, again, identify the key issues and challenges, talk about our aspirational objectives, and any next steps that we may wish to pursue. I think I might have gone a little far here. There we go. Proposed schedule. This morning we're briefing you and seeking initial policy guidance. We will return in December and ask for approval of a draft policy for public review. We will send the policy out for about 3 weeks of public comment. We have a pretty tight schedule between December and January with the setting of the meetings. In January, we'll bring back the public comment that we heard and ask you to provide additional direction on policy and then have a revised draft policy released for another 3 weeks of public comment. In the February meeting, we'll be back here asking you to consider adoption of a final policy. Mandates and existing guidance. What directs the agency as we go down the road managing salmon? The RCW 77 provides the mandate of the commission, and we've pulled out a few of the more relevant parts of that to remind you of. That the department shall preserve, protect, perpetuate, and manage the wildlife and food fish, game fish, and shellfish. And that we should maintain the economic well-being and stability of the fishing industry. The recently approved budget policy by the Commission says that we need to compare the economic benefits in policy and budget decisions, that we should continue to promote selective fisheries, and that there should be equitable sharing of the costs of management. The hatchery and fishery reform policy directs the agency to increasingly focus our fisheries on the harvest of abundant hatchery fish and directs us to a goal of achieving the Hatchery Scientific Review Group broodstock standards by 2015. The North of Falcon policy tells us that from a statewide perspective, no one group will have primary access to the fish. And that our fishery should be constructed to minimize gear or other conflicts. I'd like to just take a second to remind you of the complexity of salmon management in the Northwest. Salmon do not respect any international or state borders. They go where they wish. Salmon from Washington can go all the way up to the Gulf of Alaska, and they pass through Alaskan and Canadian waters. We've got a coordinated coastwide management system for dealing with management. The Pacific Salmon Treaty sets the parameters under which the U.S. and Canada will share the resources and protect stocks. The Pacific Fishery Management Council sets fisheries and management strategies for the offshore waters, and the department and the co-manager treaty tribes set the management of the resource within the 3 mile and inner areas, including Puget Sound and Columbia River. In the case of Willapa Bay, we do not have any treaty rights within the bay. So once the fish cross over the bar, the management is exclusively for the department. We have multiple users within the bay. We have a commercial fishery. We have a recreational fishery. Our stakeholders will remind us that the recreational fishery consists of two components, a freshwater and a marine component. Briefly, some background on Willapa Bay. When we are developing this policy, it's for the marine area of Willapa Bay and its tributaries. This is the bay right here, and there's a number of tributaries: North River and Smith Creek, Willapa River with the Forks Creek Hatchery here, Palix River, which isn't on our map right there, three branches of the Nema and the Hatchery right there, the Nacelle River way down at the bottom end, and we have another hatchery facility there, and Bear River right here. The bay itself is 100 square miles of water, and it drains about 720 square miles of land. Climate is characterized by cool, dry summers and very wet winters, with rainfall averaging 65 to 120 inches a year. So it's not a snow melt driven system that we might see on the east side. It's simply a rain system. We have three species of salmon in the bay: Chinook, Fall Chinook, Coho, and Chum. And historically, we also had a sturgeon fishery. We have white and green sturgeon in the bay that we have to be mindful of as we set our seasons. As I mentioned, we have both recreational and commercial fisheries. And I want to note the outer bay. This portion of the what we'll call the Outer Bay, or 2T, is going to be highlighted as we go through the presentation. So a little bit of history. We didn't go back too far on this for you. In the early 1990s, this was a hatchery-dominated system. We were producing fish and we were catching fish. Beginning in 1999, all of the returning coho had been mass-marked to give us more management flexibility, especially in the ocean. Between 2000 and 2006, we restructured or refocused our management onto natural production for coho and chum. And Chinook, we actually made a significant reduction in the harvest rate that was being applied to Chinook. We dropped from about 47% in the 1990s down to 30% as a bay-wide goal for Chinook. Began marking Chinook in 2007, our hatchery Chinook. In 2009, the commission adopted the Hatchery and Fishery Reform Policy. In 2010, virtually all the returning Chinook were mass marked. Five-year-olds were not, but all of the threes and fours were. Because of the adoption of the Hatchery and Fishery Reform Policy in 2009, the agency engaged with stakeholders to develop a draft Willapa Bay Management Plan in 2010. That plan has been guiding our management for the last 4 years. So we'll briefly review what the plan asked us to do. A major goal of the plan was to improve our broodstock management to meet the HSRG criteria. We identified and categorized, we identified our conservation priorities and categorized our populations. Those categorizations, for those of you that aren't familiar with the HSRG criteria, are primary stocks are the ones of the highest conservation concern. Contributing stocks are moderate, and stabilizing have a lower conservation concern. Not that they don't have a conservation concern, but it's not the highest priority. We also realigned our hatchery production based on those categories, those management categories or designations. Nacelle Chinook was designated as our primary Chinook population, meaning it had the highest conservation priority. And we reduced our hatchery production from 3 million fish down to about 500,000. With the help of local volunteers and some of the folks sitting in this room, we installed a new weir to try to control the number of hatchery spawners that were heading upstream to reduce the number that were on the spawning grounds. Willapa coho was designated as the primary coho stock, and we reduced that production from 6 million to about, 0.6 million, 600,000, down to 300,000. The plan also addressed focusing our harvest on abundant hatchery fish. In order to do that, we implemented finer scale management. We started conducting some test fisheries to determine which hatchery stocks were returning or were caught in which parts of the bay. And we redefined the catch areas in the bay and increased the number of catch areas to give us a little finer management. We also reinitiated a late August commercial fishery in the Outer Bay, or 2T, very controversial fishery. We initiated marked selective fisheries for both commercial and recreational sector, and we had a moratorium on directed chum fishing through 2017. So during the period that we call chum management in the bay, we do not have any commercial fisheries occurring at that time. The 30% harvest rate bay-wide was modified to a 30% rate on Nacelle Chinook, the primary stock. Under that direction, it would allow a higher harvest rate on other stocks as long as we maintain the 30% on Nacelle. In 2014, for our planning, preseason planning process, we actually dropped the harvest rate to 20% on Nacelle to try to accommodate what we saw were declining runs of natural origin fish in the river. We'll touch on that here in a second. Again, the three species of salmon, coho, chum, and chinook. We'll start with hatchery production. It's not an indication of the importance of hatchery production over wild production. I just want to start here. You can see in the early 90s, we had a heck of a lot of fish going into the system, between 10 and 15 million Chinook alone, 3 to 5 million coho, about over here, 400,000 pounds of hatchery fish being released into the bay. That production, as we shifted our focus more to wild natural production, declined. And since about the early 2000s, we've been fairly steady on the level of hatchery production in the bay. Our current production in the bay-wide, it's about 7 million Chinook are released annually. We have about 1.7 million coho smolts are released from our facilities, the three DFW hatcheries. Another 1.25 million eggs are shared with local volunteer programs like the RFEGs. We release about 900,000 chum, and we also share about 200,000 eggs with those volunteer groups. Willapa Bay naturally spawning Chinook, one of the species that has perhaps a high level of conservation need right now. Prior to the mass marking that we started in 2007, those fish would have returned prior to 2010. We didn't have very good information about the makeup of hatchery and natural origin fish on the spawning grounds. We assumed that we had a lot of hatchery fish on the spawning grounds. We did some coated wire tag work that confirmed that, but it was difficult to use that on an annual basis. Beginning in 2010, when the vast majority of our Chinook were marked, we were able to confirm that indeed we had a high proportion of hatchery Chinook on the spawning grounds. We also noted that our natural origin spawners have declined. I'm glad that wasn't me.
Donuts, Bob.
Don't make you fat.
So beginning in 2010, we've noticed that our natural origin spawners have declined to about 35% of the natural spawning capacity in the system. We also are not meeting our broodstock standards in the Nacelle River, our primary stock. That is, we have way too many hatchery products on the spawning grounds. Show you a series of these graphs. Just quickly explain the what the graph is. The red line is our natural spawning population capacity. The blue line is where our natural origin spawners have been for the past few years. And the green bars are the number of hatchery origin spawners on the spawning grounds. So this is Nacelle River. This is the primary stock, the one of our greatest conservation concern. And you can see that from natural origin spawners, we have not been meeting our goal. I caution you again that prior to 2010, this is our best estimate of what that natural composition is, but we didn't have mass marking to help confirm that. But clearly the number of hatchery fish are much higher than what we want to see. North River does not receive Chinook stocking at this time. The natural spawner capacity is up here, and we've been down here for a number of years. Willapa River, the contributing stabilizing stock, sorry, I got that right. We've had some successes getting over our bar, but again, we still have large numbers of hatchery products on the spawning grounds. It is stabilizing. Again, on our fisheries, we have three major fisheries within the bay. We have our freshwater recreational, our bay recreational, and our commercial fishery. Commercial fishery is entirely gillnet. The commercial fishers' licenses are a combination license. They can also fish the Columbia River. So that presents some challenges in where they will fish and predicting whether they're going to be in the Columbia or in the Willapa. We have about 80 to 90 active licenses each year. On the recreational side, this is a bit of a protected bay, except in the afternoon when the wind starts to blow. And because it's mostly protected, it provides an alternative for smaller boats to have a marine experience similar to what Puget Sound might be. And folks don't have to go out into the ocean with their smaller boats. For the rivers, we do have some limited access in some of the systems. And as private timber companies are going more to a permit access program, that's going to further limit access in some places of the watershed. Fall Chinook catches back to 2000. You can see the first thing you might notice here are the blue bars. By the way, there's a series of these will all be the same. The blue bars are the commercial catch, and you can see that the vast majority of the fish are indeed caught by the commercial sector. The green bars are the freshwater, and the red bars are marine recreational. Beginning in 2010, as we try to access a greater portion of the hatchery fish, you can see that the catches have indeed increased. And surprisingly, the freshwater component of the recreational sector has increased more dramatically, perhaps has increased, while the marine component has not. With coho, again, commercial sector dominates the catch. Catches have been very good in some years with up to 80,000 coho harvested. Some years during downturns in the coho abundance, we've had to limit fisheries and have not had very high catches. For the recreational side, most of the coho are caught in the freshwater environment. Chum catches are virtually all on the commercial side, very little recreational harvest of chum. Low catches after 2010 are generally due to the moratorium on chum and trying to protect wild stocks back here. Just note that historically we at least in the short history here, even back to 2000, we might have caught upwards of 30,000, 35,000 chum. The ex-vessel value of the commercial fisheries, main thing I think I want to emphasize here is that coho make up the bulk of the value for the commercial industry. However, Chinook are can be a significant portion, and in some years actually outweigh the coho ex-vessel value. If you're not familiar with ex-vessel value, I'm sorry for my jargon. That's the price that fishers are paid for selling their fish at the dock. So that's money directly into their hands. Of note, the average ex-vessel value for 2000 through 2003 was about $380,000, $572,000 in 2004 through 2008, and about $900,000 from the last 5 years. We've taken some initial estimates or analysis to calculate economic impact of the both sectors' fisheries. On the commercial sector, the economic impact was about $857,000 for the 2000 through 2003. The next 5 years, about $1.28 million. And in the last 5 years, the economic impact, this is economic value to the community and creation of jobs, about $2 million. On the recreational side, the 2000 through 2004, almost $2 million, declined a little bit in 04 through 09 to $1.7 million. And the last 5 years, about $3.2 million of economic impact. So maybe it's surprising to folks that it's pretty equally split in recent years between freshwater and marine, although freshwater is certainly a large... we hear a lot about the marine fisheries. We don't hear much about the marine or the freshwater, but clearly it is still a driver for economic impact within the basin. Key issues that we've heard and identified already, many of these are probably similar to what you've heard with the Grays Harbor policy. Transparency, how do we make decisions? How do we develop our seasons? Monitoring and enforcement, in-season management, conservation and hatchery reform, and the fishery challenges. I'm going to focus more for the rest of this briefing on the conservation and fishery challenges. So for Chinook, we've been transitioning from hatchery-focused management to natural origin management. It's been a painful transition. It's difficult. As we're trying to make that transition, our natural origin spawners are low and they're declining. As we noted earlier, our hatchery origin spawners are very high in the nacelle and also in the Willapa. Our chum, we haven't made goal in 8 out of the last 10 years. Fishing in the Outer Bay, I noted earlier, was very controversial. I want to try to illustrate partially why we think that that's happening. Back in the late 80s, we had... So first let me go through the bars here. This blue bar is August 1st through the 15th. Red is the 16th through the 31st. Green is the first week of September, roughly corresponding to about Labor Day. And then the last bar is the week after Labor Day. So back in the late 80s, we were fishing the entire two-week period of August 1st through the 15th with commercial fisheries in the Outer Bay. A day or two between mid-August and till after Labor Day, and then a few days after Labor Day. Similar pattern in the early 90s, maybe a little extra fishing here or a little additional fishing between August 16th and the week after Labor Day. declined quite a bit through the late 90s and early 2000s. And then in the late 2000s, we had virtually no fishing in the Outer Bay by the commercial sector until after September 15th. As I noted in, under the 2010 Willapa Management Plan, we reinitiated some fishing in Tootie, trying to access those abundant hatchery stocks. I think it's safe to say that's been a bit controversial. Definitely conflict between the two sectors. So there's our outer Tootie fishery. It does increase the ex-vessel value for the commercial fishery. We noted earlier that Chinook can be an important component of ex-vessel value and economic impact for the commercial sector. The recreational sector concern is that a belief that those fisheries, removing those fish from the bay, greatly reduces their catch and their catch per day, catch per trip. The Lower Willapa River fishery, this is Section 2U or Area 2U. Historically, we fished 5 to 6 days a week, sometimes even 7 days a week in that area. The concern is that the fish may not be able to get through that gauntlet of fishing effort and escape to the upper river, which would provide benefits to the recreational fishery as well as meeting conservation objectives. I will note that we have met our coho conservation objectives, so perhaps a little information may not be as readily available to folks when they raise that concern. In 2014, we reduced the number of days per week that commercial fishers were up in that 2U area, which resulted in some lost opportunity, and as was noted earlier today, at least for Forks Creek, a large number of hatchery coho returned to the facility. Mark selective fisheries for Chinook were implemented beginning with the 2010 plan. One of our greatest challenges is that for gillnet fisheries, we have a 56% release mortality rate. For hook and line fisheries, a much better rate of 14% is what we use in the marine area. So our aspirational objectives that we've developed over the past few weeks, these are what we want to try to aspire to as we put the policy together. Hopefully they describe a suite of outcomes that we will strive to achieve. Purpose is to inspire, motivate, get the creative juices flowing, of innovative strategies. And hopefully we can promote assessment of trade-offs between options. They're not entitlements. There is no property right to these objectives. And they may not be achievable. They all may not be achievable, sorry. On the conservation side, our objectives for Chinook, these are our proposed objectives. For Chinook spawners, meet nacelle and North River spawner goals in 10 years, and meet watershed-specific HSRG standards in 10 years. I will note that we heard from the public that this could be a very difficult task to accomplish, and concern was raised that the public may not fully understand the implications of trying to achieve that objective. For coho, meet our Willapa Bay aggregate spawner goal, which we noted earlier, we are meeting that currently, and meet our watershed-specific HSRG standards. For chum, meet our Willapa Bay aggregate spawner goal in 2017, and meet watershed-specific HSRG standards immediately. I think it's also accurate to reflect that there is a widely divergent viewpoint from the public about meeting these HSRG standards, with some of the public wanting us to meet them sooner rather than later, and some of the public not wanting us to ever meet them. On the recreational side, a 25% increase in catch within 5 years relative to the 2009-2013 average. So you can see our catch has been in this area of 8 to, well, upwards of 14,000 fish, average right around 10, 10.5. We want to be up here at just under 14,000 on an annual average in 5 years. On the commercial side, suggesting an objective of $900,000 of average ex-vessel value, which would be fairly close to where we've been currently for the last 5 years. Potential strategies that we've identified already to consider and develop options for. We could look at sector priorities, either commercial or recreational sector priorities. Those priorities could be time, they could be areas, they could be species. Hatchery production. Can we modify our hatcheries, facilities, and what we're producing and where to try to provide as much benefit as possible while meeting our conservation goals? Continue to improve our broodstock management and removing hatchery products from the spawning grounds. Look into the development and use of alternative gears within the bay. Find additional mark selective gear that would have a lower mortality rate than the 56% we're currently using. Marketing our products down in Willapa Bay and our fisheries that are available, trying to increase the attention that Willapa might garner from other recreational anglers, and possibly looking at ways to market the commercial products specifically within the bay. Liberalize restrictive regulations that we might have, and focus on habitat protection and restoration. That's all the briefing that I had for you today. If I could answer any questions, and then perhaps the public might have some opinions to offer, and then would love to come back up and see if you have any guidance for us as we move forward in this policy development.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Great job. Any questions? First, Steve? Commissioner Kehoe.
Thank you, Steve. Very good presentation. I think you laid out the issues and kind of some background for somebody like me that doesn't have much experience in Willapa, but I think you did a great job. So, I think my question, though, is directed more to the gentleman on my right. The department's recent budget proposal to the governor's office, I believe, called for a reduction or elimination of funding for Willapa hatcheries. And so could you just remind kind of us what that proposal was and maybe the reason for that proposal?
First, I would also remind you that it is the commission's budget that was forwarded to the governor's office.
Understood, yes.
And thank you. That was based on a proposal that came to the commission from the department. So,
understood.
You have a degree of ownership in this.
Duly noted.
The budget proposal that was provided to the governor's office from the commission that was informed in probably a significant way by the department staff and myself was in response to the instructions we received from OFM to provide a budget that represented a 15% reduction in general fund dollar expenditures by this agency. We, as a bit of background, that you probably know these numbers because I've repeated them a number of times over the years. In the 07-09 biennium, this agency received $110 million of state general funds to fund our activities. We're now down right around $60 million. I believe it's $61 million. So we've had a, and at one time we were all the way down at about 55 million. A 15% reduction, when you look at the numbers, is about $11 million, a little over $11 million reduction from that level of 61 or so. So in developing our budget package and the we looked at where we spend general fund dollars, and those general fund dollars are spent in four primary categories. One of them is fish production or hatcheries. It's a significant portion of our general fund expenditures. Another area is enforcement. A significant portion of the enforcement's expenditures come from revenue from general fund. Another area is fish management. Another area is habitat protection and restoration. So when we looked at constructing an $11 million reduction in general fund, those are the categories that we look to make those reductions. So then when we looked at each one of those categories, hatcheries, out of the 83 hatcheries that we have, there's a subset of those that have general fund as a primary contributor to the funding those hatchery operations. The hatcheries in Willapa Bay, there are hatcheries in Puget Sound, as well as Grace Harbor, where the majority of the general fund dollars are spent in terms of funding hatchery production. The majority of the hatcheries on the east side of the state are funded by wildlife fund dollars, as well as local dollars, as I mentioned before, from local utility PUDs that are providing us money to operate hatcheries to mitigate for the loss of natural production of salmon due to hydropower projects. So the hatcheries that we looked at we looked at a combination of the state of the hatcheries in terms of the facilities, the capital improvements that are needed to maintain those hatcheries at a high level. So hatcheries that have had capital improvements and are in good shape and whose production benefits, we can show that a substantial portion of the hatchery production from those facilities benefit the citizens of the state of Washington. We looked at those kinds of parameters. Those facilities that have high surpluses, where we're spending a significant amount of money, but we have a due to the management constraints, be it due to endangered species listings and or concerns over natural populations within a particular region that inhibits our ability to access hatchery production, was another consideration. So from a hatchery perspective, we have cuts contained in that budget that include cuts to the Nacelle hatchery, to the Nema hatchery, to hatcheries at Samish and at Minter are the primary areas where we proposed taking general fund reductions from hatchery production. Relative to fish management, we looked at where the revenue, the proportion of the revenue that came that funds the activities associated with recreational fisheries, and then we did that same analysis for commercial fisheries. I think, as Mr. Lake mentioned, the excise, the revenue that's derived from the excise tax on commercial landings goes to the general fund, as you know, as does the majority, not all, but the majority of the license fees that are collected from commercial license applications go to the general fund. And so as we as we have gone from this $110 million level down to $60 million, we've done our level best to maintain fish management activities that support commercial fisheries. But frankly, when we got to the point where we had to take another 15% or $11 million off the $60 million, we put on that list as in terms of recommendations closures to certain commercial fisheries due to the lack of general fund dollars to support the management activities needed to sustain those fisheries. As you probably also recall, we have significant cuts to enforcement officers. I believe there's 8 enforcement officers that are cut as part of that package. There were cuts to our HPA biologists that go out and permit projects, so that habitat protection piece also got significant and cuts. I don't think anybody around this table supports the cuts that we had to propose, but the bottom line is we had to reduce $11 million off of a $60 million general fund that had come down from $110 million, and so we had to propose cuts that are extremely difficult and painful to propose. We were also asked to prioritize those cuts, and with respect to the management, the dollars that go to support the management of the commercial fisheries that we're talking about, those were on the low end of the priority list. So obviously, we are going to make every attempt possible as we go through the legislative session to make the arguments that the investments of general fund in these hatcheries, in enforcement, and in these fisheries pay dividends to the state of Washington, that they there are jobs created, there are sales tax revenues created from the activities that are created as a result of the hatchery production, as a result of the commercial fisheries that take place, as a result of the recreational fisheries that occur, that come out of the hatchery production that we're talking about. So they're a good investment. You're kind of cutting your nose off to spite your face, if you will, to make these cuts. But at the same time, that did not take away from the reality that this agency had to submit a budget that represented a 15% cut in our general fund. So we're about to, a little over 2 months away from entering into the next legislative session where the next biennial budget will be debated and created. And we're going to do our level best to make every argument that we can to maintain the level of general fund expenditures that are being made as part of this agency, because we think it's a great investment on the part of the state.
Just one follow-up. Thanks, Director. Steve, could you go back to the slide that shows the current hatchery production? So, yeah, exactly. So, I get just a follow-up to that, Director. With the commission's budget proposal, thanks, what would the and the reductions in Willapa hatchery production, what would those numbers look like? If that budget proposal were to be adopted and these reductions were to go in effect?
Well, if my memory serves me correct, the production that you see in the smolt releases in NEMA and NACEL would no longer take place. We have, obviously, the implementation of that, if the legislature were to determine that those kinds of general fund cuts to this agency were part of the package, and those revenues were cut from this agency and those hatcheries were closed, then beginning in the the fall of 2015, those releases would not occur. And so that the production from those facilities would be lost.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Steve or the director? Commissioner Holzmiller?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there being the newbie and the guy from the east side, I guess there's some things on this whole issue that I'm not bound by tradition. One idea that I keep hearing floated from time to time, and being a free market capitalist, and when the term word ranch came up, my ears perked right up, but the idea of ocean ranching, where there's some smolt raised in nets and then turned loose, and then the fish will return back there. You're kind of getting some commercial value out of some fish. Plus, you're going to have some fish caught in the marine component. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas on that?
That topic comes up often in Willapa Bay as a potential alternative. I believe currently our RCWs do not permit us to go there. We would have to present new legislation or revised legislation to get there. It would perhaps be something that we could provide some analysis for you of what it would take to get to ocean ranching, what kind of steps the agency would have to take to get there. But it would definitely, I believe, I'm going to look to Phil, that would require a change to our current legislation. Is that right? Yeah. So,
biologically, do you see a downside to it?
I would definitely want to run some analyses of what the potential impacts might be on the wild stocks and make sure folks were aware of what that trade-off or what those potential impacts are. It would be difficult to say right here and now without doing some further analysis.
But do red flags go up initially, or would you think that it would be worth something to pursue?
For me, personally, the only red flag I'm thinking of is that many folks have tried and have not successfully made a lot of money doing it. So whether there's enough there to generate revenue that could help folks out, that would be something that I would want to look at. Is it truly going to work before you invest a lot of time and effort into it?
Thank you.
Director Anderson?
So just a bit of a follow-up on, I'm not sure I'm going to merge into your lane of thinking here appropriately, but another alternative that we do have, that we currently have the statutory authority for, is to enter into partnerships with private entities to continue as a partnership for funding these facilities all or in part. So setting aside the ocean ranching kind of concept, but instead looking at, are there ways for us to partner with the local community or other entities to help partner on funding these facilities in the event that we don't continue to get general fund for support of these? That is an option that we have under our current statutory authority. We have examples where we're doing that. McAllister in Hood Canal is an example of that, where we have partnered with an entity to provide funding so that we could continue to have hatchery production from a facility like that.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that's the kind of thing I like to see. I hate it when we get made where we're picking winners and losers. I really like programs where it's a win-win situation, everybody comes out ahead. So that's my two cents worth, and I hope we can keep pointed in that direction. Thank you.
Commissioner Smith?
Have any of, have any of the RFEGs in the region come forward and, you know, looking at partnerships for hatcheries or?
Commissioner Smith, I'm fairly new to the region. Nobody has in my time, but I might look to my colleague Ron over here, who is out there for quite a bit longer than me, and let him try to answer that.
So, thank you, Ron Warren, Fish Program.
You can go sit in a seat.
No, I'm okay. Just don't.
I want to feel like I'm accepting a proposal.
No, yeah.
Don't kneel in front of
I'm
us.
I'm sorry. Wow, I didn't know I was going to make that kind of a scene when I came up. So I know that we have current activities with RFEGs, and Mr. Lake, who testified before the commission earlier, is currently the head of the RFEG in the Willapa Bay area. They currently do chum enhancements and continue to seek additional enhancements, and we continue to work with them as they can expand those opportunities, and we'll continue to do that. So those additional options are before us, and we just need to continue talking with those folks to see what all those possibilities might be.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Are there questions on Willapa? You've done a good job for this initial briefing, and there will be more next month, the month after. So thanks. Did a good job. And thanks for this big booklet. I'm going to study this. The commission's been provided, I think, everything that the ad hoc committee has been given.
There may be a few minor items that we've provided recently, but we'll try to keep you guys up with what we're providing to the public.
Oh, and I should just respond, since I've been one of the people talking about ocean ranching a lot. Dick Wilson, oyster grower in Bay Center Mariculture, moved to Willapa Bay in the 70s after leaving his post as professor at Southern Oregon University, PhD in geology. Also a very knowledgeable person about aquaculture, he moved to Willapa in order to do ocean ranching. And what he tells me is that he was very successful in the mid-70s. He was able to generate a run of Chinook and chum coming back into Bay Center, into the lower end of the Palix. He thought it was economically worthwhile. I don't think it was ever his intention to be exclusively making a living on ocean ranching. Subsequently, he was denied eggs and a permit by the Department of Fisheries at the time. They closed down his ocean ranching operation. And he has resented that for decades. He's brought it up periodically for the 20 years that I've known him. He'd like to get his sons back into the business. He has all the equipment. We've got a lot of aquaculture knowledge and experience in Willapa in the oyster industry. He thinks it's very feasible and is very interested in chum production more than anything else because it's easy to raise, release chum. So ocean ranching, I think, is viable. I think it's something we need to explore. Okay. Well, let's move on to the public input. Oh, what's that? Oh, no, we're going to hear the public input, and then we're going to talk about commission guidance. Okay, we've got a good number of people. Good number of good people signed up. And once again, we allow 3 minutes.
So much to the map.
It's just, yeah. We've got about 9 people. Okay, we'll call you up 2 at a time, and then you have your 3 minutes to testify. Sit in front of a microphone. When you hear the beeping noise, your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude. Okay, the first two people are Dave Hamilton and Gary Johnson. Mr. Hamilton, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. This is probably what I do least well in life, so bear with me, folks. Good morning, Commissioner. My name is Dave Hamilton. I would like to bring forth several issues in the Willapa restructure effort underway. First, Commissioners, is the fact that in the past decade, the Willapa communities have sacrificed much to resource salmon. From RMZ setbacks to reduced timber harvest, it has cost millions of dollars, lost jobs, and economic stability. Controversial in the beginning, most have come to accept the need to restore salmon, but Commissioners, there is really an issue. Those that shouldered the steep price of environmental reform actually thought salmon restoration meant that once again salmon would return to the home streams. This has not been the case in many places in the state, but in Willapa it has been particularly egregious. Harvest impacts have continued to go unabated and in some cases increased. We have an over-harvest, under-escapement issue in Willapa that must be addressed if the promised salmon restoration is to be real reform. Verbiage won't get us anywhere anymore. Okay. The second issue I wish to address is the simple fact that despite much talk and grandiose plan, little has changed with the hatchery production issue. From HSRG to the 21st Century Salmon and Steelhead Initiative and many other conceptual ideas all direct the agency in the direction of salmon recovery. In Willapa, these directives have and continue to be simply ignored. WDF&W verbiage says compliant, yet resulting actions paint a far different picture. The current Willapa plan was supposed to be the answer, but it only made things worse. Commissioners, the current plan simply failed in all aspects to address hatchery reform or failing escapement of wild stocks. Again, the end result being, in most cases, only making the problem worse. The failure of WDF&W to comply and embrace hatchery reform and natural spawning populations reform in the Willapa is glaring. I urge the Commission to simply confront this issue head on and not skirt it. If this is not done, the issues in Willapa will continue to worsen and again return to you for resolution. Okay? My last issue, Commissioner, is understanding that the Commissioners have a desire for solutions and not the usual finger-pointing and posturing. To accomplish this task, the Commission must clearly and without confusion set the direction to proceed. Frankly, if one thought the Grace Harbor Management Plan was difficult to achieve, then the Willapa Plan is nearly impossible. Okay? It's going to be a really lousy thing to go through. Okay? Simply put, the natural origin recurve Chinook are declining due to massive overharvest. Hatchery Chinook straying is substantial, far above any acceptable level in the Willapa and North River. The last Willapa stream with any resemblance of the natural order is not protected. Returning natural coho and a massive decline to near critical levels due to extreme overharvest. Chum stocks have suffered virtually the same overharvest as Chinook and coho. So, Commissioners, tell us the direction and the parameters both the agency and the citizens are to utilize in drafting of the new Willapa plan. It is the absolute necessary first step.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim Hamilton? Yeah, and if you come up two at a time. Okay, Mr. Johnson.
Gary Johnson. I live in Raymond. I'm here today to talk about the Willapa Salmon and Steelhead Management Plan. For a lot of us, it seems like it's business as usual with WDFW. It's time to see major changes that support our fisheries, future generations. I don't understand why the public does not trust the director, WDFW, or policy implementation. Despite many RCWs and multiple plans, the department continues to do whatever it wants behind closed doors, and we have many examples. Attempt at fee increases for the fleet, I do not support. Well, excuse me, I'm reading the wrong thing here. I attend meetings and hear the same old thing from the commercial fleet. There is no wild fish in the Willapa. Are you saying you're trying to create a wild fish from a hatchery? The wild fish population is in decline. I wonder why. Plain and simple, non-selective fishing from the gillnets from July to November. There were 1,210 times the nets were in the bay, and it still continues today through November. When you have systems like the South Fork of the Willapa, Salmon Creek, Cedar Creek, Palix, eventually they become void of fish. Landowners will testify to the dying watershed. How many more salmon and steelhead management plans will we need before the salmon are gone? Many populations are. I'm asking the Commission today to support the salmon and steelhead populations of the Willapa watershed that consists of 430 streams and 1,262 linear miles. Thank you for your time and consideration and hard work. Our salmon and steelhead wait for changes.
Thank you. Art Holman. Okay, Mr. Hamilton.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Hamilton. I live in McCleary. I'm the other Hamilton. And I'm the president of the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy. For many, it's been decades. For me, it's been three long years to get here. We challenged the 2013 season, Art, Ron, and I. We didn't believe that the plan was being followed. It wasn't a plan anyway. And it violated, because I come from the world of legislative laws, the policies of the commission, the mandates of the legislature. It was as if Willapa had been somehow exempted from statewide law and policy. We argued with the department over that. They proceeded. We filed a legal challenge, and we never got in front of a judge to decide whether we were right or not. We settled with an issue that we would come to you today. We would reopen the Willapa. I'm hoping this works because I personally don't want to go back to court. That's very tiring for an old man like me. But for us to proceed to do our work, and I thank the department and the director for appointing me to the ad hoc committee, we're ready to do our job. We're ready to build a playbook for you. But you got to tell us the game. I can't build a playbook if you don't tell me whether it's football, basketball, or baseball. Give me the field, give me the gear, give me the ball, and we can do our job, and we're ready to go. In this game, it's, are we going to manage for conservation first and harvest second? Are we going to honor HSRG and hatchery reform? Are we going to honor and comply with the Wild Fish Initiative? All three of these things, if you go to the department's website, the public sees this is what we're supposed to do, and every one of them has been denied. And we're at the same point. Please answer that question for me. Is Willapa exempt from all the state laws? Is it not part of the state of Washington? Answer those questions. We're ready to go. We've got the right people in the right place at the right time. But I can't write a playbook if you don't tell me what game I'm playing. And the department, to this day, after three meetings, is reluctant to say, yes, Willapa is in the state of Washington. They just can't seem to do it. And when you get to the aspirations, how do you cut hatchery production? How do you match HSRG? And at the same time, promise all the stakeholders you're going to give them more fish. Now, that's not, I aspire to be president, but I'm 50, 65 years old and fat, and I'm probably not going to get there. These aspirations are ridiculous. So tell us, is Willapa in the state of Washington? Did you mean what you said when you passed these initiatives, when you put your website up? Because we got to know. Thank you.
Mr. Hamilton, did you just announce for presidency?
And I'm going to have trouble with my Lady Mary. So no, trust this. We have the right people in the right place at the right time. We just need to know what game we're playing. Okay, we can get her done. But I got to go back and write tons of paper. Thousands of hours it takes me to do this. I'm not a biologist. But I can't do that unless you tell me the department has been told Willapa is in the state of Washington.
Okay, we got you. Brian Kramer. Okay, Mr. Holman.
Yes, I'm Mark Holman. I'm going to take you back a little farther back in time than Steve did. I started fishing the NEMA in 1970. At that time, we had a lot of fish that were 40-plus pounds, kings. We couldn't keep them. It was strictly a hook and release. Then the department decided, well, we aren't going to let them go up and spawn anymore. We're going to make hatchery fish. So we've destroyed part of our natural origin fish just by stupidity. In 2004, we were right back where we are right now, trying to decide what we're going to do with the Willapa. Now, if it takes me giving up my rod and reel to get natural spawners back to the river, I'm willing to do it. How many other people are willing to help the river out? Thank you.
Thank you. Bob Lake. Okay, Mr. Kramer.
So, first off, I'd just like to thank the department staff for answering all my questions and providing data and the nice presentation, kind of summarizing the state on the ground. So, in moving forward to provide guidance on WLPA policy, I think it would be useful for the commission to consider that while we're trying to meet all these conservation goals, we also try to maximize the combined economic value of these fisheries. Up until now, the economic value on the rec side has not really been a consideration. I think that's a nice move in trying to have a more equitable management of the fishery. And I think it's going to be important in the face of all these budget constraints that we really stress that there are, as the director said, significant dividends from these fisheries that when you just look at the commercial piece, it may not be completely apparent, all the community benefits that are accrued by having these hatcheries function. So I would encourage the commission to do whatever they can to try to sustain these programs that have been going on for decades.
Great. Thank you. Francis Estelito. Okay, Mr. Lake.
My name is Bob Lake. I'm, as you've already heard, I got many hats I'm wearing here today. I'm on the advisory committee for Willapa Bay, as well as President Gillen's Association and the lead man for the Willapa Regional Enhancement Group. I want to go back real quickly, and there's a lot of information we're sharing today, so I'll hit it as quick as I can. The hatcheries in Willapa Bay started in 1898, okay, and the reason was for mitigation due to logging and farming. That's why the hatcheries were put in. There was also a problem in Willapa Bay for gravel recruitment. Very few rivers have the gravel recruitment for Chinook, okay? And I don't want to really get into the whole spiel, but then that's the reason the hatcheries was put in. There's a few places we could put Chinook, but they don't do well for one reason or the other. We've tried. And ocean ranching is against the law in the state of Washington. And another thing I'd like to bring out, net pens. We did a lot of net pen work on the RFEG stuff over the past few years, or a number of years ago. We turn around and we have a pollution problem. Everything we have underneath those net pens, upstream, downstream, is totally sterile from the excrement from the fish, okay? And the same thing you have in Puget Sound. I hate to see net pens, period, for that reason. So I say, I don't know what's going to happen with the oyster people if they try it. And the washout and the whole works. So, I mean, that's something else to deliver. But also, there was a bit of question on the nacelle about trying to... Did you have a question or something, Phil? Oh, okay. There was a question about the nacelle and the what was going back. But here's what I can give you right here. Spawners passed upstream of the Nacelle River this year was 238 unmarked fish. There's been years when that run that comes back to the Nacelle hatchery, where there's been anywhere from 14 to 17,000 Chinook went above. Absolutely, they did not survive for whatever reason. We don't know. And actually, that watershed's fairly protected. But there's got to be something there that's stopping that. So whether it was a wise choice trying to make the Nacelle the natural spawning thing, but we're not going to be able to create a wild fish. Not going to happen. The stuff in North River that was introduced by the department, those fish, those eggs came out of three different rivers in Oregon and two in Puget Sound that I can trace back to. Okay? And those didn't hold up real well. We got some strays and stuff that was put in there too, I think, by other people. But what I would like to get into, there's the Magnuson Act stated that no one user group would take the brunt of anything. Well, the Gilliter's one's been taking the brunt of it for a long time, especially in Willapa Bay and Grays Harbor. Also, I would like the commission to look at the retaining of unmarked Chinook in the ocean by all users in the ocean, because the Willapa Bay fish aren't getting back for some reason. They're not getting impacted there by either the commercial or wrecks. Also, the wrecks fish straight through August 16th under ocean rules, which they can retain the natural Chinook. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Marlissa Duggan? Okay. Mr. Estelita.
Hi, Francis Estelita, no stranger to this table. Thank you for leaving the PowerPoint up, because I'd like to draw your attention to the map of Willapa Bay and have the commission reconsider how to better realign our harvest and hatchery practices to better facilitate Mr. Teasfelt's ability to meet all the conservation objectives set before him. I think we're doing it a little backwards. I'll go back to, he introduced a new term today, the outer bay. Let's call this outer, and let's call this mid, and let's call this inner. Stacked right on top of one another. We put our primary conservation population down here at the bottom. They've got to run the whole gauntlet, outer, mid, to lower. We're not doing it. We cut the commercial fishery down by how many days, Bob, that you guys got pulled off the water? And we still, with that reduced fishing power, we couldn't get those natural origin spawners back here to Nacelle. We're creating mission impossible for ourselves. So somebody wanted the game. I'm giving you maybe a way out to reduce conflict, to make Mr. Teasfeld's job more achievable, and to meet conservation objectives. I think we need to abandon this idea that Nacelle should be the primary population. I know we've worked hard to do that, but it's proving to be impossible. This might be a better way to go. This will be more achievable. Let's make Willapa the primary Chinook population. It'll realign all of the conservation for this little piece here. North River and Smith Creek have now emerged as a natural population that hasn't been making any of its conservation objectives. I mean, the whole line, I wish I could go back, but there was a red line up here, and there was a whole bunch of escapements down here not making it. If you make this the primary population for Chinook, it will encompass this. All the things we do for conservation will help this. It will align our primary populations for Chinook and coho. So throughout the whole season, we don't have to try to switch gears to try to conserve natural fish populations and fight how we're going to direct our fisheries and create conflict between our commercial and our recreational sectors. I had one other thing I wanted to say. Lost it. Aspirational objectives. I guess that was. Meet North River Nacelle and North River spawner goals within 10 years. I don't think you can do that with the way we're doing it. But if you realign it the other way, you'll get North River in there. And one last question. Commissioner Kehoe asked about what would happen if we cut NEMA and Nacelle. And basically, we'd be left with that top line on Forks Creek. But one of the things that didn't get asked was perhaps they can give us an idea is what is the capacity to expand production at Forks Creek if those other two hatcheries go by the wayside? And that's all I have. Thank you.
We'll mull that one over. Ross Buckhurst. Okay, Ms. Duggan.
Thank you, Francis. My name is Marlisa Duggan. And I represent a small portion of the recreational fishing community using the rivers of the Willapa Bay. I respectfully submit my signature and those of 125 other fishermen. I provided a copy through your attendant out there in the front office of other fishermen from the North Nemer River that I gathered in September of 2014. The purpose of this informal survey was to illustrate and verify a mere sampling of the numbers of recreational fishermen using the North Nemer River in simply a 2 to 3 day period. I represent recreational fishermen. I would ask that all of you take a bigger look at the importance of and the economical impact that recreational fishermen throughout the bay currently offer. Then thank you, Steve, for your graph about the ever-expanding revenue that we continue to contribute throughout the state, not just in Willapa. And I was told that there was a possibility that you were considering the closure of the Nacelle and the NEMA, and it would break my heart to see you do that either. I won't throw the interests of one recreational fishing interest under the bus to save another. I think it would be wrong to close either hatchery. Obviously, my primary concern is the NEMA. That's where I'm from originally, and I have a lot to say about that. One of the previous gentlemen brought up the topic that there was an original native run of Chinook in our river that were large. They came early. They came in the end of July and August. They were 40, 50 pounds. A lot of pictures in my family archives. We've been there since the late 1800s. That run was knowingly and selectively killed off by the Department of Fisheries because it wasn't convenient to run their hatchery weir. They have removed my native run of coho, the big hooknose silver that used to run in the NEMA, because that wasn't convenient either. It interfered with the harvesting of the Chinook salmon. The Chinook were sitting in the river. We don't have enough water in the river to really get those fish into the hatchery to get them out of the way of the incoming early run coho, and so they simply stopped letting them go upriver. And when we swapped hatcheries of which production was being done where, they simply took my early run of coho out and put them in the nacelle where they live today. So I don't believe that we should close either hatchery at this time. I wasn't prepared to talk on that topic, but I would beg you to try to find the funding from somewhere. Surely if we can send millions of dollars in foreign aid across the water to overseas to help other people, we can keep our couple hatcheries open here in the state of Washington. So please, who is going to be responsible for finding the funding for that? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barkhurst.
Thank you. My name is Ross Barkhurst. New member of the ad hoc committee on a new policy for Willapa. Haven't had the chance to analyze the staff's presentation today yet. We need a conservation first policy for Willapa Bay. You don't start a policy like that by throwing away the biggest drainage we have in the system, the Nacelle, to wild production. You don't start a conservation first policy by eliminating the south half of the bay from conservation. The Nacelle is the poster child after all these years for how you can't regenerate natural origin Chinook in a place where you're pumping in hatchery Chinook. If we don't know that that can't be done by now, we're not paying attention. We need to open our rivers to recreational fishing. We had a number of proposals last year all turned down by the department. I've attended meetings for a couple of years now steadily and heard no proposals to enhance recreational fishing in the bay. I don't understand how a system like Willapa can be can exist under a draft policy since 2010. Gets back to the are we part of the state or not, I guess. The draft policy wasn't followed anyway. So, very concerned about the problem we have in the Bay of serial inability to meet escapement goals. And you all should be mindful of the fact that we have put millions of dollars into habitat improvement. These and many of them should be successful. But we're operating without a date escapement goals where the public gets no credit for its investment. In enhancing escapement. We just stick with the old ones and don't meet them. So the new policy, I think, is going to have a lot of good input. I'll try to do my part. but we need a new commitment to follow the policy, whatever it is, going forward. Otherwise, the new policy, no matter how good it is, won't really help us solve the problems. Equitable cost sharing of management is a good goal, I heard today. We have nothing near that now. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the public input on this agenda item. So now we can move. Steve, do you want to come back up and we'll go through a discussion of commission guidance? The Fish Committee met on the subject, discussed some concepts, and I think the chair of the Fish Committee, Commissioner Mankin, has a list to bring forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to start by saying that what I'm about to present to you, and for the director, I want to say that this has been done in the complete absence of the commission's budget. There's no way at this time with this kind of short period to look at things. So what this is, hopefully, as Steve has said, this is to get the innovative juices running. The Fish Committee did meet, and we discussed all of the issues that were brought to your attention with Steve's presentation. It reflects a majority of the Fish Commission. It's not a slam dunk, but it's most of the Fish Committee. So, in terms of guidance, the Fish Committee would like to offer the following. First, we recommend that the guidance be assembled into multiple options and reviewed again by the Fish Committee before presenting to the advisory groups for their input. We think we would like to certainly have the opportunity to take another look at what you come up with here. These options would be reviewed with the advisory groups, but the options should not be limited to our guidance alone. There are good ideas out there, and you've heard a lot of good ideas here today. First, we propose prioritizing Chinook for the recreational fishery and Coho and Chum for the commercial fishery. Second, in order to attain separation of the two fisheries and reduce conflict, we would like to have you look at locating the commercial fishery in the south of the bay and the recreational fishery in the north of the bay. We would like to look at flipping the primary hatchery production for Chinook to the Willapa and Chum and Coho production to the South Bay. We would like to examine the potential for hatchery enhancement of Chum salmon production in the south of Willapa using traditional egg boxes, looking at the possibility of some of the new modern hatchery reuse systems. We know when we recognize that this population in Willapa Bay is severely depressed, rearing chum salmon is a relatively easy technology, hatchery technology. It's now a valuable commercial species for the commercial fishery. And we would therefore like to look at the legal operation in the South Bay of chum salmon hatcheries termed sea ranches. And we would like to have you use as examples the Alaskan private nonprofit sea ranching operations as an example, and the Japanese system, which currently releases 2 billion chum salmon into the North Pacific and is their single most valuable hatchery species. And finally, we would remind you that it is the intention of the Fish Committee to meet the Commission's hatchery reform policy. And I repeat, finally, we want you to meet the Department and the Commission's hatchery reform policy.
Okay, thank you. Director Anderson, Mr. Estalila asked that question about increasing Forks Creek hatchery production. Do you have any thoughts about about that question?
Well, I would want to talk with Ron about that. I think the whole idea of the swapping of the primary population from Nacelle to the Willapa River, what does that mean in terms of what we do with hatchery production of Chinook out of Forks Creek Hatchery? I mean, I think that's particularly in light of the hatchery reform policy. So I think we're going to have to look at all of that. If I could ask a
sure.
question of Commissioner Mankin, the first part of your comments before you got into the specific items, I wasn't clear on what the expectation was of us to communicate with the Fish Committee prior to having further discussions with the advisors, and I didn't, the way you laid that out, I wasn't clear on what that direction was.
Yeah, when the department completes the options and the dialogue to go with the options, the Fish Committee would like to have an opportunity to review that before it goes to the advisory groups. And then when it goes to the advisory group, these options are options, but we don't limit the options that might be developed by the advisory group. We feel there are some good ideas out there, and they must be listened to as well.
So when is the next advisors?
And I recognize the timing on the system. I talked to Jim a little bit a few minutes before the meeting, and he thought that this would be possible. But if there's a crunch in terms of time, I think we'll have to review this.
The next advisory ad hoc advisory committee meeting is Thursday of this week. Next week. So 6 days.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that one, obviously.
that doesn't mean we don't have lots we can still try to accomplish at that meeting. So.
Okay. Is it possible to put this together in that short period of time?
I'm not sure if we can get all the options done, but we still have other work that the committee may be able to attend to. For example, we had talked about exposing the committee to the AHA model, and perhaps we could reconfigure things to maybe utilize that Thursday meeting for that process. I'm just thinking on my feet here.
I'm just
go ahead, Director.
Thinking it's... We have Monday and Wednesday is what we have.
Yeah, I just don't see.
The meeting on Thursday night, right? Is it an evening meeting, right?
Correct.
So...
Isn't there another meeting in early December?
So in your books, there should be a schedule of meetings right up front. So our next ad hoc committee meeting is the 13th, and then we have another one on the 20th. Now, I've still got an open elk tag for Montana if we don't want to meet on the 13th.
You do?
I do, yes.
So
well,
yeah.
Director Anderson.
In terms of the options and having that vetted with the Fish Committee prior to taking it to the advisory group, it seems to me we ought to be targeting the meeting on the 20th for that, so that when we get to the 20th, we've had the opportunity to develop the options, vet it with the Fish Committee, and then take it to the advisors and use the 13th to do some of the other things that you're talking about, Steve, so that we're not trying to do this in a matter of 2 days, which is what we've got between.
Okay. Agreement.
May I interject something to an advisor, just from an advisor perspective? Committee, not as a citizen, just from a procedural
Let's talk about it afterwards. Okay. Also wanted to address this question of, is Willapa part of Washington State? What do we think? Is it part of Washington State? I think we all think it is.
I would defer to local knowledge.
I believe it is part of Washington State. And I believe that the hatchery and harvest reform policy that we adopted is a statewide policy. So if you needed that clarification, I think that's easy. Is there any objection to that on the commission? No, I don't think so. Okay. So that kind of guidance may help. I don't know.
Yes.
Would you go back to that slide that talks about the key issues, the big issues? Because I thought that was very valuable when we looked at the Grays Harbor policy. It kind of sets the framework, the template for the kinds of topics that we need to address that the public has brought forward for many, many years. Transparency. I think we're all in favor of transparency. I don't know if that's helpful guidance, but we want the department to be seen as responsive and listening to people, giving them an opportunity to understand the options and understand our rationale as we make a decision on those options. So this is all kind of hard to it's hard for me to understand where the problem is. I guess we need some examples. Maybe the public can help us with examples of where the department is not seen as transparent enough. Maybe we can come up with some policy statements on that topic. And we should look at Grays Harbor policy because I think we addressed it there too. Monitoring and enforcement. We're for enforcement. we're for monitoring. I don't know, Director Anderson, do you want to give us a sense of what the specific question might be for us to give guidance on here in terms of a policy on these topics? Maybe I don't want to make light of...
Well, I think you point out, it's a good point, that the transparency piece can be a part of the policy and that in the development of that, and we can certainly have a section that deals with transparency and communication with members of the public. Monitoring and enforcement, I think the monitoring of the fishery piece, we've stepped up our game in that this year, and I think monitoring, particularly when we're in situations where we're in any kind of a selective fishery mode, that on the water monitoring is an important component of that. Enforcement, part of our package that we have proposed to the legislature, has an enforcement component to it that is that the Willapa Bay is a part of. In-season management, I think that's going to be a key piece of our conversation as to what the capacity and what the tools are that we have available to us to make informed in-season management decisions. So I think that's a key issue, certainly, and one that will deserve some further conversation, exploration of management tools, and have that elements of that included in the policy. The conservation hatchery reform piece, I think we've already talked about. I think we understand that piece. The fishery challenges have been articulated here today and previous to today, and the challenges with meeting the objectives of the two sectors, whatever those end up being, are going to be a part of that discussion relative to fishery challenges. I think there were some good points made in terms of what we're trying to do and what we're trying to achieve from a conservation and hatchery reform perspective. Can we do those things and expect to increase fisheries or maintain fisheries where they are? I think that's a tall order, in my mind, to meet our conservation objectives, meet our hatchery reform objectives, which are a part of the conservation piece, but do that at the same time that we're expecting to increase fisheries is a tall order. And I guess we'll go through this process and look at what we have in terms of tools for providing access to the hatchery production that we have is going to be, I think, going to play into whether or not we can meet those objectives that we have, that we ultimately set for our fisheries. So, I mean, that's just some of my thoughts as I go through those five bullet points.
Okay. Regarding in-season management, how much of that do we do now?
In the 2010 plan, we indicated that we would not do in-season management, barring some radical departure from our preseason expectations. We did implement some changes to the fishery in season this year, fairly minor ones. They are certainly viewed differently depending on who's at the receiving end of those actions. Very controversial. Mm-hmm. So, but we did, for the first time in a while, make some in-season changes this year that were intended to enhance conservation. So,
I think, given that that was a big issue in Grays Harbor as well, I think that when we looked at that issue in Grays Harbor, we encouraged the use of in-season management because it's more fine-tuned.
Correct.
Than our predictions can be. So I think we can give guidance that we, as a commission, have supported in-season management as a preferred approach in the past. Give you that guidance. And the monitoring question ties right into in-season management. How much monitoring we can do in creel surveys and those kinds of things cost money. We have to recognize budget constraints, but if we come up with a policy, then we go out and try to find the money to support those enlightened actions. So we get the interconnection there. But I would say more monitoring, as much as we can afford, and try to do even more than that, seek funding to do even more. Anyone object to that idea? No? Director Anderson?
I don't object to that idea. I think you want to tailor your monitoring to what you need in terms of information to inform potential in-season management decisions. Yeah. So it could be more, it could be directed in a different area. You know, the key about monitoring is to make sure you're getting the information that you need to inform your decisions. And mm-hmm. you know, whether it's more or different, you know, is going to come out of the conversations of the advisory group and be a part of the thinking and the plan in terms of what's recommended in terms of our monitoring. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the final thing that I would say is you called these goals or objectives aspirational. I kind of chuckled because I think that's the first time I've ever heard us use that term. Aspirational, it sounds pretty highfalutin. I think the intent is good. I think that is exactly what we should be doing. We should be thinking long term. We should be thinking about where we really think we ought to be getting to, despite the near term disruptions that it might entail. So, no matter what kind of alternative we start looking at, there will be pain, some degree of friction and pain. And I think we just need to think about what's right to do in the long term, even though it's hard to get there. That's my guidance. Anybody else? No other guidance? Do you have any questions for us, Steve?
I don't have any questions, but I did want to recognize that this is a team effort as we move mm-hmm. forward, and Jim Scott and Ron Warren have been instrumental. Chad Herring from the district has really stepped up to help. And then the folks left behind that are behind me, Mike Scharf and Barb McClellan, are picking up the slack as we're spending so much time and effort on this. So I may be up here, but this is truly a team effort from the region. So
great. We thank you all. Good job.